had parachutes on there. First aid come down in the water. They haven't reused it yet, but they you know, fished it out of the water successfully without any damage. They plan on eventually catching their rockets with a helicopter. It's coming down the first stage with, either a parachute or a parasail. I think they're going to go with the parasail. Because, you know, that you could direct that. And then they're going to have a helicopter come by, scoop it out of the air, and then bring it back to a ship at sea. And we use those boosters. Virgin Orbit, that's the same company as Virgin Galactic, you know, that's owned by Richard Branson and, you know, another branch called Virgin Orbit. And they launch rockets from a 747. They've done a couple of launches so far, and their goal is to have some type of reusability in the future. But, you know, I think it's a long way off, of course. Astra, they said that they don't plan on using, for having reusability, but they've yet to get a rocket into orbit. They've tried three times. They launched out of Kodiak, Alaska, and they got another launch coming up, so they think this time they have a shot, because they had a unexplained fire. At the time it was unexplained. Now they figured out what it was as it was taking off, and it broke. That fire at the launch complex broke one of their electrical connections to one of their rockets. We got five rockets on the booster stage. That one rocket failed, and because of the whole thing translated over in one direction, you know, it wasn't going up, wasn't going down. It just moved all the way to the side. It was really strange. You can see that on replays. And then it took off, and sure enough, it looked like it was going to orbit, but it didn't quite make it. It needed its fifth rocket to successfully make it. Firefly is another one. They got their first rocket off the ground. Usually, no aborts or anything. Usually a first rocket ever. Is a problem. They thing took off, went over the Pacific Ocean, and then didn't quite make it. They finally, you know, I mean, it was up there, but then they destroyed it. Had a little problem. I think they might make it next time. But they have reusability in the back of their mind. AVL Systems, I'm not sure if they're going to do that or not, but definitely another company called Relativity. This company is building the whole rocket engine, the whole body of the first and second stage of aluminum, and it's all 3D printed. I mean, they have one complete rocket already, and they're halfway through another one. And they think that eventually, once they get things rolling, they'll be able to make a rocket per month. But that's another company. So a lot of companies working on that. And hopefully it goes well for at least half of them. So I'll have something to talk about under that. Very good. Well, we'll turn it back over to Roy. Thank everybody. For listening to this part of the TechNet. We'll definitely be back here next week. We try to make the club info and that's on tomorrow night at 8:30 on these same repeaters, which is, you don't have to be a member to check in. That's always followed by Slop and Shop and then followed by the Radio Newsline. So, yeah, turn it over to you, Roy. AC2GS, WS2N. Back to you, Roy.
ATS here. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for your help on the technical net. Thank you on behalf of the club for all that you do, club. We all appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I really did appreciate it as well. You guys make or break a technical net. Humor, knowledge, all kinds of fun stuff. So we'll be back next week to do it all over again. Perhaps we'll revisit that puzzle that Andy got from an electrical engineer. I don't know if we'll ever crack this particular nut, but we'll give it another attempt next Sunday night. So I hope you'll all come and join me next Sunday night for that. As always, I like to end these things somewhat the same way that Dick, HRIW, used signs to each other. That's always the case, but especially in these times, it's particularly the case. So, you know, things are nasty out there. The end of this is not yet reached. There are still some bumps in the road. Please, smart, be clever, be safe. Protect yourself, protect your loved ones, protect your hated ones, because they deserve it. Well, be safe. Be back here next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we'll do it all over again. This is ACS, formally closing this episode. I'm our technical net, and I am here.
AC2GS, WHCDL. I just turned the radio back on. I have a question.
Okay, Andy, what's your question? By the way, we took up your friend's puzzle, and pretty much we're a wee bit confused. I'm more confused about the thermocouple watt meter than even what the black box has. But we're going to kind of do part two next Sunday night after all the clever people out there had a week to digest it.
2EPQ?
Yes?
Roy, could you do me a favor? You had mentioned the web page that, you know, we should look up with your page there. And you were saying it is somewhere a little bit quick for my ears. So could you say it kind of slow so I can write it down, or we can write it down?
Sure. It is Roy, that's Romeo Oscar Yankee, dot, my call sign is ACS, that's Alpha Charlie, 2 Golf Sierra, dot com, C-O-M.
Excellent. Very nicely said with the phonetics and all. Thanks a lot, Roy. Back to you.
You're welcome. If I do it wrong, there are more than a few hams who smack me on the wrist. So, Andy, you wanted to say something.
It's actually not a question. It's a statement. I forgot to mention to you, Roy, when I called you, Steve mentioned to me, he's the guy that drew the schematic, these meters are analog meters. He specifically said that. They are round, analog type, like a Weston or a triplet, and that's what he said. They are not digital meters. He specified they're analog meters.
Okay, I made that assumption when presented with that question. I said that this historically is a gentleman. I assume Steve is in his 50s or 60s, and that this took place in his early 20s in college. So with back then, most people didn't have digital, I would assume. So I told people to assume that it's an analog meter.
Okay. I was listening just a little bit, but don't get stuck on the fact that the thermocouple watt meter has three leads, because that's the way he wrote it. He drew it. I didn't say that right. That's the way he drew the schematic. Don't get hung up on that. The main question is, what's inside the black box? That's the question. That's why there's a question mark there. To concentrate on what is in the black box that would cause the circuit to do what it's doing. That's it.
Unless part of all this is an artifact of the way that the meters make their measurements. Possible. And tell me that's overthinking it. It might be. But at this point, I'm not sure, you know, how to fulfill Kirchhoff's law and such under the present circumstances. I'm trying to figure out how one meter reads one thing and another meter reads quite a different thing. And not coming up with any easy answers personally. So this is not a simple question, I do not think, but I might be totally wrong.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the schematic now as I have these different thoughts about it. I have to do some calculations to figure out know, basically speaking, what voltage, well, actually, I shouldn't have to even say that because no, from the schematic that he gave me, I was going to ask what voltage is the black box producing, but you already know that because he mentions it, half a volt, 0.5 volts. So when you're measuring across that black box, you're seeing 0.5 volts. Question is, where's that 0.5 volts coming from? You see, I guess if you think about it logically, how are you getting a half a volt across a black box when the thermocouple watt meter is reading 0 watts? See, that makes no sense, because the meter itself is reading no wattage at all, which means there's no, either there's no voltage across it or there's no current through it, one or the other. But you're still getting 0.5 volts across the black box. So wouldn't that indicate that the voltage is actually coming from the black box in the first place?
Not necessarily. Let's say that it's just a 1-ohm resistor there. So you basically have a voltage drop of half of a volt from the first 1-ohm resistor. So it could be something as passive and simple as a 1-ohm resistor. It doesn't explain, though, how the current is 0.5 amps and the watts are zero. You could have any potential, voltage potential with no current, and you'll have 0 watts. But how you have a voltage potential of 0.5 and the current going at 0.5 with 0 watt is my problem.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're saying also. There's many different angles of looking at this. Okay, well, again, I got to study it. I just glanced at the circuit and just came up with that conclusion. But not necessarily. Again, more information is required. But before I go and talk to him about it and say that I got the answer, question is, do I really have the answer? Now, of course, if I ask him, he'll tell me. I'm sure that if I went up to him and said, or if I catch him on the air, remember that schematic you drew? Okay. Could you give me the answer? And he'll say, well, why should I? You're supposed to figure this out. And he got, as I said, he got it wrong himself. He told me that it was a 50-point question, and he did not get it right. That's why he gave it to me. So it's going to take a little bit of head scratching.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's going to take a heck of a lot of head scratching because I'm getting nowhere. Like I said, I was kind of thinking in terms of it's an oscillator, but that would give you the exact opposite. The thermal watt meter would be capable of accurately assessing watts in all current, whereas the analog ampere voltmeter is not designed to do that out of the box unless it has it has a setting for that. So that would give you the exact opposite. You would have a non-zero watt meter result and a zero amperage and voltage result. So I've yet to figure this one out.
Well, one question I am going to ask pertains to the watt meter itself, the actual watt meter. I'm going to ask him this question, and I'll say this to you. This is the question I'm going to ask. Is that meter that you drew, that square with the W in it, is that actually a three connection watt meter? I'm not going to ask you if it's AC or DC. Assuming it's DC, but I'm assuming that. But I'm going to ask him specifically, is that watt meter itself a three-legged watt meter? That's the question I'm going to ask. That's the only question I'm going to ask.
Okay, it sort of begs the question in that you could theoretically, as you well know, you could design something with three legs with proper diode designed to operate with alternating currents as well. It's just that, you know, once he starts to make a point to thermocouple, you know, as a few people mentioned, thermocouples are usually RF. They're not used as DC. So it begs the question that that this is something that should give you a much accurate result with a non-DC signal, as opposed to the opposite. So, yes, you know my point.
Yeah, I know, I can understand that. A thermocouple watt meter is usually used at RF frequencies and not DC, as far as I know. A meter that's calibrated in watts does not have two coils in it, one that measures a voltage and one that measures a current. It usually does not, like you said. It has just two leads, an input side and an output side. It's a series circuit. It's in series, but it operates on a thermocouple principle where the temperature of the thermocouple is either proportional or the square of what have you of the current going through it. And that's calibrated in watts, so the more current is going through, antenna current, RF current, whatever you want to call it, because there is antenna current. A thermocouple RF watt meters are usually used on the antenna, and they're usually used in high power transmitters at radio stations, and that's how they measure the power, unless you have a line section like a bird. But that's what I remember reading, if that makes any sense.
WB2EAB.
Yes, Ed.
Let me just interrupt this for a minute. Andy, I gather that this was on a test for credit in a class. Can you confirm that?
Oh, I thought Roy mentioned that. Yes, I confirm that. Steve, WA1QIX, threw out the circuit in front of me on a napkin and said that when he was in college, his college professor gave everyone this particular schematic and asked the class, what is inside the black box, given the numbers that is written on the schematic? You got to guess what's inside the black box. And he said it was on an exam and it's worth 50 points. And he also said that he got it wrong. He was surprised he got it wrong. He did not get it right. This was when he went to school back. Steve is 2 years younger than me, so I'm assuming back in the 70s. He was licensed back in the early 70s, just like me. So does that answer the question?
Yeah, actually, all I wanted was you to confirm I understood it right. Yeah, you just repeated what Roy said. Right, let me tell you why. Quit going about this the wrong way. This is a pedagogical disaster. This is not in the curriculum. If nobody on the net, including Roy, has gotten anywhere in all this time, how can you be asked, blindsided, out of the blue, for something that can affect your grade? It might as well ask you about the history of what happened in 14th century Bosnia. It is irrelevant to the subject you are undertaking, right?
Wait. Poor Roy, let me say something.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to get the context of what you're saying that in. Unless I'm in the wrong, unless I'm just saying something out of the blue myself. The reason how this came about, Ed, I'll give you a little history. I just came back from Nearfest up in New Hampshire, and I had on my table my little light bulb puzzle. And I said to Steve, come on over, because I know he's an engineer, and I've seen his circuit designs, and they're pretty good. I said, Steve, come over to my table. I want to show you a little puzzle, electrical puzzle trick with light bulbs I think you'd be interested in seeing. So he never came over, by the way. He never saw it. But I guess it sparked his interest, so he says, "Oh, you like puzzles? Here's one for you." That's how this whole thing started. If that's what you're trying to say, Lloyd, because you said it has nothing to do with anything else, that's how this whole business came about.
Wait a minute. I'm talking about the professor who gave the test so many years ago. Roy Cummings?
Yeah, I think you're having strange cross purposes. Sometimes professors are mad at tatters. I mentioned during the net that my anthropology professor, who died in jail, by the way, showed us a documentary totally in French. And the way he decided to make amends for asking it on the midterm was to only ask questions written in French. So some professors are kind of dotty. The historical aspect of that is this professor offered 50 points. I assume it was a standard test of 100. So to walk out of an exam, I walked out with 110. I never walked out with 150. It kind of means that it was so difficult and probably unlikely for people to figure it out that he gave 50 points for it. So I think it was just the professor who wanted to show off that he knew something that other people didn't.
But my point is, it is not in the curriculum, and it is just, it's abusive behavior. It is emotional abuse and nothing less.
Well, again, I mean, I've been abused by teachers. I remember an English class in college where we were talking about the ends, justify the means. And at some point or another, the English teacher guessed that I was a Nazi. That was the first day of my that English class. So I picked myself up, and I transferred to another English class.
Yeah, well, you're just saying that you've come across similar cases of emotional abuse. I'm not saying they don't happen. I'm just saying this sounds an awful lot like another one, that's all.
It could be that, or it could be some professor who thinks he's very clever, and there might be a solution that we're kind of all missing that's obvious. You know, some kind of trivial puzzle where, as Andy likes to tell me about this thing, that maybe we're all just thinking smart about it. If we saw the situation, it might pop out. I don't think it will, but who knows? I mean, I can't really make the assessment whether the professor was really abusive, unless or until someone tells me what the particular solution is. When someone suggested a blocking capacitor, which wouldn't have worked for the circuit either, I felt that that would have been a really crappy puzzle, that you have to infer something that doesn't even belong in the circuit.
Roy, I'm not saying I'm a brilliant genius. But I say I've been doing circuit design for 60 years. And if you baffle me, and no one else in that audience noticed it, it's not a trick question. You heard my comments about a Peltier Junction cooler to cool off the thermocouple so it doesn't read. I wonder if it's something stupid like that, that he hasn't defined the problem. And he says, "Oh, well, you type blah, blah, blah." And everybody says, "You didn't tell me that."
Well, yeah, ultimately we won't know unless or until Steve tells Andy the answer, and then I think we can make a final assessment of, yeah. Some puzzles are great, some puzzles are not awful, and this might just be one of those that are awful.
I am getting cold. I'm going back in the house and putting it back on the AC antenna.
Okay, don't discomfort yourself on our account.
Hey, Lloyd, I'll give you some information.
Information?
If you're interested, which I know you are, in asking Steve any more questions, I'm sure he'll be glad to help. And without giving you the answer. So, tune in. It's a general announcement. Tune in on Saturday mornings on 75 meters. At 8 o'clock, the net starts. There's a net called you've probably heard of it, the Lonely Guy's Net. Steve is the guy who runs the net. He's net control. They have quite a few check-ins. They have sometimes 30, 40, even more. So depending on what list, how fast you check in will determine your number, because they go in order, whoever checks in first. So come on, it's either 3885 or 3873, I keep, or 3875. Yeah, I can look it up. I can look it up. Steve will be on. Ask him any questions you want about the circuit. What school he went to, what was his professor, what year this was, anything regarding the schematic, and then he'll tell you firsthand. I did not get a chance to ask any of those questions because we were all going out of the restaurant up in New Hampshire. So Roy, come on on, and we'll ask him.
Okay, I'll see what happens next Saturday. 8 o'clock is kind of early for me for a Saturday. I like to sleep late.
All right, well, the net starts at 8, but usually doesn't go, it doesn't stop until sometimes 9:30, sometimes even 10, because they have a lot of check-ins. And, you know, people just talk. Sometimes too much. So I'll give it a try. I'll get you the exact frequency.
Okay.
Yeah, he might even have it on his QRZ page, the frequency. Let me look it up. $38.75, Saturday mornings, 8 o'clock. It's on, I did a Google search, Lonely Guys AM net. I see, you got the frequency, 30, go on 38.75 on AM. He's an AMer, like we all are. So go on AM and tune in, you'll hear him.
Okay, we'll see how things go Saturday morning if I'm conscious at 8 o'clock.
All right, I may or may not be on, but if you hear him, you'll hear his call. And then you can tell him that I spoke to you, and I gave you the schematics, and I asked the question, and so on. And I'm sure he'll be happy to help.
Well, since we're both sitting here on the 21st century, I think probably the easiest method is just to pull his email from QRZ and ask him, assuming that he believes in email.
Yeah, he does. He's a, he writes software also. He was working for Bose. The Bose Corporation, because they're up in Massachusetts, and he was doing the software design for their speakers or something. Knowledgeable in that area also. He does a lot of software design. I speak to him about it. It's pretty good. You'll be impressed.
Okay, we'll see what happens next Saturday. Sometime this week I'll shoot him an email to see if he's in the mood to just email me the answer and be done.
Yeah, I'm sure his email is on QRZ. You can email him. All right, I'm going to go. Goodbye. I'm going to sleep.
Excellent idea. Eventually, I too will do exactly the same thing. Whoa, what an incredible coincidence.
Bye, guys. Thanks. I'll be mutually interested.
Okay. Thanks, Ed. I really appreciate your input on all this. Michigan.
Michigan is right.
Yeah, well, but if you don't even have Michigas to talk about, you know, what do you want to do? Stand around and stare at each other?
No.
Okay, so, you know, if it's got to be Michigas, let it at least be interesting Michigas.
To yourself.
Indeed, likewise. This is AC2GS. Going clear for the second time tonight. Usually I average about two or three clears before I finally stop talking. Hopefully this will be it. So everyone out there listening, if you are actually listening, be safe, be well, and we'll talk again. AC2GS.
You gave me an idea, Roy. We should start another net called the Michigas net. I bet you will get a lot of check-ins. We could say, hey guys, you got Michigas? Come on, join the net. I just thought I'd say that. See you later, Roy. I'll talk to you this week. WHCM.
WS2N, this is
station calling WS2N, WH2N.
Jim, KD2BHD.
Yeah, are you new, Jim? I don't recognize the call.
Relatively, we've spoken. You actually fixed my ICOM 2-meter rig, the one I'm working now at the HamFest.
You got a better memory than me. Which HamFest? Weimar?
Yes.
Okay, don't ask me what was wrong with it, because I don't remember. Okay. I just came back from, if you were listening, Deerfield, New Hampshire. I went to NearFest, which is a ham radio flea market. It's called NearFest, and that's a good one.
Sounds like an interesting trip.
It's not that bad. It's 240 miles from my house, so it takes me about maybe 3.5-4 hours to get there. And it's not far from the Massachusetts, I guess it's about 80 miles from the Massachusetts, New Hampshire borderline. Something like that. I gotta look at it on the map again. I know how to get there. I've been doing it for a number of years. But it's not a bad trip. And it's a 2-day thing. It starts Friday morning and ends Saturday afternoon. So if you have a camper, you can camp out. They have, I'm not sure if they have hookups. I know they have electricity. I don't know about sewer. But it's at a fairgrounds in Deerfield, New Hampshire. And they do it twice a year. They do it in October, and they do it in May. So the next one's going to be next May in 2022.
Sounds interesting. I could camp with or without any of those amenities. Work fine. Well, what did you find more interesting, the equipment or the people?
Well, the equipment is always interesting because there's a lot of stuff to see, including KJI is there, Quicksilver is there. You know, these are the dealers and a few others. And of course, the place is packed with a lot of stuff. Although I didn't buy anything because I got too much anyway. I got to get rid of stuff. I've been collecting for years. I just got too much stuff I don't even use. So I was good. I didn't spend any money. And I usually stay at the Holiday Inn, Manchester, New Hampshire, which is only about 15 miles or so. No, actually less than that. It's about 8 miles. I think it's around 8 miles away. It's maybe a 15, 20-minute ride. And the weather was great. No problems with the weather. We had a good time. So, in fact, Weimar's flea market is coming up next month in November, so I'll be there.
Is that happening again already?
Yes, it is.
So that's twice a year, I suppose?
Weimar's has it 3 times a year. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. No, twice a year. One in October. Usually it's October. This year it's in November. One in October. One, and then of course the next one is next year, which is in February or March. And then one, let me see. No, maybe it is 3 times a year. Okay, February is one, or March. February, March is one. June is the second one. Right, and then October is three times a year. I made a mistake, 3 times.
So the October one is coming up?
The October one is coming up next month in November. They pushed it up.
Nice. The first one I ever been to was the one you were running the station and you troubleshot my ICOM 2300 2-meter rig, and intermittent on the antenna connection, and that was it. I soldered it up, and I'm talking on it now. And I also bought a ICOM 706 there. It was a nice event.
Oh, I remember now, WHCDO. Yeah, I remember that radio, okay. Yeah, I showed you the problem with it. Yeah. Okay. So we'll see you next month. That'll be good. Yeah, I started helping out with these flea markets, I guess, back in 1980 or so, maybe even 79, somewhere around there. It's been a long time.
You were taking a beating that day. We had RF interference from a crappy generator next door, and then nobody cared to give you a hand, to give you some shade, because you were absolutely fried in that on that day.
Yeah, I didn't bring my tent because I didn't have one.
Sitting in the parking lot without a tent, that's a tough day.
Hey, Andy.
Yes.
Did you go to Nearfest, W2HO?
Yes, I did. I was just talking about it.
I just turned the radio on.
W2HL, W8CDL. Yeah, I was there. It was good.
Yeah, well, I missed it. Sorry I missed it, but and maybe next time.
I was also down in North Carolina for Shelby. That was back in Labor Day weekend. Did you go to Shelby? I'm not sure.
No, I wanted to, but I couldn't get away because one of the reasons, I had nobody to watch my cat. So, yeah, that's a reason, really. That's one of the reasons. I think I'm going to take him with me.
Okay. Yeah, very good. And okay on the cat. Yeah, I guess you got to... Can't just leave the cat alone. Well, the next big one that I'm planning on is Orlando, Florida. That'll be in February. And it'll be nice to get away into a warmer climate, because I don't like the cold. So we'll see. I'm not sure if I'm going to drive or fly. I'd rather fly there, because it'll much faster. The question is, how do I bring my equipment down? But we'll see. Maybe I can work something out. Okay, the other station, I forgot your call. I didn't write it down. The guy that I was originally talking to. And give me your name again, please. W-H-C-E-L.
It's Jim. KD2VHD. Victor Hotel Delta.
Okay, Jim. I finally wrote it down. Where are you located?
In Bayport.
You said that fast. I didn't get it.
To Bayport on the South Shore between Fashog and Sable.
Okay, I know you're east because I can tell by the beat. Repeat is going to shut off in about 10 minutes. Usually goes off about 5 after 12. So, okay. All right, Jim. So we'll see you next time.
Good talking to you, Andy. Thanks again for your help with that rig that you helped me with. It, like I said, I'm talking on it now, and it's my favorite rig. It works beautiful. You revived it. 73, have a good night.
Yeah, no problem. I like helping if I can. And sometimes you could pull your hair out. Sometimes things are easy. So, all right, 73 to you. I'm going to pull the switch, too, because I've got to get to bed. So, 73, Jim. And Howard, back to you, and then I'm going to sign.
73, Jim. Wolf, sign. Welcome to Ham Radio. And I'm mobile right now. Stationary mobile, as they say. In Rockaway Beach. Yeah, nice hearing you, Andy. And I haven't been to a Ham Fest on. And you know anybody offhand, Andy, that puts up antennas sideline? Because I would like to put up a beam if I can't get my tower going. Meantime, at least I'll try to get the IV on my roof.
No, not right now. The problem is we're all getting old. We're older, including me. I can still climb, but I'm not as agile as I used to be. So, but, I'll ask. I don't know of anybody off the top of my head, but I'll ask around.
Okay. Yeah, we're all, that's right, we're not as agile, that's for sure. Yeah, I just had a quadruple bypass in April. I guess I told you. And, I am, before the bypass, I got out of breath as I walked up the flight of stairs. And it really helped. Now I don't have any problem with that. I can walk unlimited. It's amazing. Okay, good hearing you in there. And, yeah, I really wish I could have gone up there to near the near that. Okay, have a good night, Andy. And 73 check.
Okay, Limewalk's coming up next month. I got to get the date on that, which weekend it is. I'll see you there. But NearFest next year will be in May. So next May, you should come up to NearFest. Stand by. All right, I'll be right back, WH Studio. I'll talk to you later, WH Studio.
Okay. Are you going to Dayton?
No, I'm not planning it.
Okay. Okay, 73, have a good night. W2H.
Yeah, 73, WH Studio.
N2VH, Mobile. November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu, Mobile, listening.
November 2, Victor Hotel, Mobile, this is KD2VHD.
KD2VHD, this is N2. Ken is my name. I am Mobile. I'm on Echolink, though, and I'm using a hands-free device on my Android phone. My Android phone's linked, paired with my car audio. So I just used one touch method, you know, touch the phone to transmit, touch the phone to release it. So I'm driving down the highway here and got the Limewalk repeater, you know, tuned in here and on the app. And most popular ham radio repeater in the world, so why not, you know? And I'm out here in South Dakota. I don't know if you've ever been out in South Dakota, but if you have, you might have probably been. I'm in a pretty popular area. I'm out in the western side, out by Mount Rushmore. Have you ever been out in South Dakota? Back to you.
I can. No, never been there. I will get there, most definitely. I like the governor there, among other things. A great state out there. This Echolink thing is really a twist to my mind. Are we talking on the web or are we talking on the radio? Ken, this is Jim, KD2VHD. It was a long carrier, but no audio, no voice whatsoever. So something went wrong with the transmission. Same thing, carrier, no audio, no voice at all. Good luck trying to fix that. This is KD2VHD.
Jim, that's not me. That's not me. I cannot transmit on Echolink until the carrier's dropped. Echolink is a company 20 years or more. It was originally created by somebody that it was low bandwidth back in the dial-up days. And it was the original incarnation of this, which we have now, different proprietary systems. But it runs on all multiple platforms. It's not proprietary to any manufacturer. And it runs beautiful, very low bandwidth, and it runs perfect, you know. And I prefer that over every other system that came out since then. There were two in the beginning. One was IRLP, Internet Radio Linking Project, and then there was Echolink. Internet Radio Linking Project needed a radio to start and end the transmission, whereas Echolink did not need a radio to begin the transmission. And Echolink can come in through, now it's smart devices, computers and so forth, and can come out on the same or on radios, or can go in through a radio and come out on vice versa. So, yes, there is. I am using a smart device. I am using a phone. But I could use a radio to come in and use the internet to carry my signal through. It never used to be an internet at one time. It was an Echolink peer-to-peer system. It carried it along, and then it came out through Echolink nodes. That since has evolved and blocked it out with the internet. But over 20, 25 years of the maturation process. But here it is, you know, Echolink. And that was not me. That was somebody keying up. It might have been a malicious issue right there. Back to you, Jim.
Roger, I had to pick up that,
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W.
W2VL.
Hey, 1 AMR listening.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGL repeater.
W2VL. W2VL.